Planning your vacation?
Chris, what do you want to go on a vacation?
Why not take Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin with you?
We're going to go to the beach.
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
That's good.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go. And it's absolutely free.
That's really good.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3 no matter where in the world you are. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I know one thing that is being discussed is having flex space for the Bay Center. And while I think that's great and that's fine, when it comes to conferences, meeting planners, they want ballroom. They don't want a space converted from a basketball game and then laying down carpet. They need acoustics. They need lighting. So this is separate. So I know this is going to be a whole nother wrench in trying to figure all this out and how to best utilize the space. But right now, we're on a roll with putting Pensacola on the map for meetings and conferences. We have people that want to come here. They want to bring 2,000, 3,000 people. We can do regional events. We just don't have the space, and we need it because we can bring them here.
So if you thought the conversation about the Bay Center's future, or not really the Bay Center, but the additional buildings that they're looking at building next to the Bay Center had been decided already, think again. Visit Pensacola is not going to go down without a fight. And this is Tia Robbins from Visit, who presented to the Pensacola City Council on the question of the second building. Should the second building be a flex space that can accommodate primarily athletic events and, you know, conventions like trade shows and, you know, things like Pensacon that could also sort of do double duty for some conventions? Or is it going to be the really nice kind of space that can primarily appeal to conventions and breakout rooms and a ballroom, and then maybe do some other things as well, but primarily be focused on that? And, you know, Visit Pensacola has argued for quite some time that we really need a convention space because we currently don't have the facilities to handle large conventions. We can handle up to about 400 people at the, you know, basically the Hilton, okay, has the biggest ballroom in the area, and that's all they can handle, and, you know, they're very, very busy. And there is no other good large space to handle the kinds of everybody together with a keynote speaker and a nice dinner kind of place. We just don't have it.
Where is that sweet spot for you guys in terms of what you're trying to attract, A, and B, where you think the market, you know, has the most demand?
I mean, right now, our sweet spot, like I said, is 400 because that's all that we can fit
right,
in the
Hilton. No, I'm talking about in the future.
So right now, up to 400. Somebody's got 500. Not really. Somebody's got 1,000 people that want to come to Pensacola. No can do, sir. Cannot do it. And so we're turning down about 75% of the business that we could be getting because people want to come to Pensacola. We just do not have the place for them. According to Darren Schaefer, the CEO and executive director, I forget which title applies to him right now, but you know, he's the primary person that the board picks to run the agency. And anyway, so Allison Patton asked the follow up. Okay, but what if you got the ballroom? What if you got the big convention space that you do want?
If you have additional space potentially available, what would be that sweet spot for us, do you think?
Oh gosh, I would say, well, first we would want at least 75,000 square feet of meeting space, and we would at least want to hold about 3,000 people. We have a lot of regional events. There's fraternities and sororities as well that hold conventions that we have the interest of at this time.
So 2,000 to 3,000 is what we could do if we had the breakout, you know, space and the ballroom, which we do not have. That would be a massive change in the number of people coming here for conventions during the week, possibly some weekends. You know, there's been a lot of conversation about this. But again, even though the Escambia County Commission and the City Council had seemed to be leaning more in the direction of the flex space, Visit has been arguing for, you know, and on behalf of or in conjunction with you know, the business community, they have been arguing for the Chamber of Commerce. They have been arguing for having a convention space for as long as I can remember. And I think they perceive correctly that they're kind of losing this fight, but they're not done. So, again, Tia Robbins.
Now, because we meet with so many planners and they particularly enjoy Kai and I, we're building a relationship, they're always like, okay, well, I have other planners that have smaller conferences, or they have smaller this and smaller that, and that's how we get all the smaller events. But we're always losing out on the larger ones because we tell them, well, we can't hold, we tell them straight up, we can't hold you guys. We can't hold this type of event, so we're passing up on those opportunities.
I mean, Viz is doing a good job of catching, you know, the small to medium fish, but right now, their space access just does not allow them to catch the good-sized fish. They keep having them. They're on the hook repeatedly, but they have to turn them down. And that is money that we are not making here in Pensacola. And that is business activity and therefore bed tax and sales tax and hustle and bustle and attention, which means visitation, more people vacationing here because they come here like, man, this place is great. Want to come back here with the family, you know, not so much with my friends in the chiropractic convention. You know, that's the idea. And it's, you know, they're turning away lots of people all the time. And again, if 400 is your max, and you could handle with a 75 or 100,000 square foot convention center with a ballroom and a hotel, those are key pieces because it's got to be both, then you could handle something that's, you know, 5 to 6, 7, 8 times that large on any given event, 400 versus 2 to 3,000.
Now, because we meet with so many...
Sorry, I've just played that one for you.
What is exciting is we have the potential to book events that will want to come here multiple years in a row and not just be a one-off and then moves out around the country.
So if you can accommodate these larger groups, you can also accommodate them over the course of several years. Instead of having to sell each individual event, you can sell a schedule of events over the course of time. An additional problem that they're having right now is that they can't really book the Bay Center in advance because it's booked up with other things. Whereas if they had the convention space, they believe that they could not only do better at landing and do very well at landing the bigger conventions, but land them multiple years in a row. And they wouldn't have the scheduling issues that they have right now with the Bay Center because everything is kind of a piece in the puzzle, right? Trying to figure all that out. Also, our airport, really, really good. In fact, people come in to Pensacola and then drive to Mobile for a convention or Fort Walton Beach for a convention. You say, why? Because our airport's good and the other airports are, by comparison, not as good. And they're willing to put up with that, but wouldn't it be easier if, instead of having to drive to those other places or Orange Beach, they could just come here, fly here, stay here, fly back home. Everything would work great.
We know that people are coming into Pensacola to attend conferences over in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores. They're going up to Mobile. They're going over to Destin, Fort Walton Beach, and they're flying into Pensacola to do that. I talked to Todd, and he said that the airport handles 91% of the general traffic from Baldwin County and 32% from Mobile County.
Wow.
So that's a lot of traffic that is basically bleeding out of our market.
A third of the traffic to Mobile comes through here? That's insane. I mean, they do have an airport, right? But they'd rather come here and drive there and deal with all of that challenge. So again, we have a lot of the pieces already, and if we could just, this is their pitch, okay, Visit says, if we could get a convention space, again, with a ballroom, a hotel, and, you know, 75 to 100,000 feet worth of, you know, breakout rooms and all of that, then we could handle the conventions that we are currently losing to everybody else. They want to be here, and we just have to say, no, sorry, the hotel, you know, no room at the inn. Our catch limit's too small.
I know that the hoteliers have a DMO also. How do you all work with them?
Charles Baer.
If you're talking about the Escambia County DMO,
right.
It's a bit of a misnomer.
Okay.
Because it's not a destination marketing organization.
Okay.
It is a group of tours and businesses, primarily hotels, but they have restaurants as members as well. Mm-hmm. And they meet on a regular basis. And so when we have the opportunity to present, we're excited to do that. But it's a group that comes together to talk about relevant matters in the county.
And remember, I had explained this to you before that a DMO is a term of art. It's actually a legal term. It is the designated representative for destination marketing for an entity. In our case, Visit Pensacola does that for, you know, for Escambia County and for the city. And the DMO, as they are calling themselves, which is a group of hoteliers and some restaurateurs who have come in and, you know, they have pitched the athletic flex space. That's what they want. And you say, how are they related to Visit? Well, they're, you know, I mean, they work with Visit, they're hoteliers. At the same time, they are their own entity and they have their own ideas. They are not really a DMO, even though they call themselves that. And that's kind of what Darren's getting at. Well, you know, they're a bunch of nice guys who get together and talk and have views. Right. They're not technically a DMO. Also true. But it is what they've been calling themselves for a long, long time. So, you know, words matter. But in another sense, you know, they don't as much. And that's what Charles Barrow was getting at and asking that question. So what does this mean going forward? Well, obviously, you know, it was the agenda review. It was just a presentation. This was not, or actually, it was the Community Redevelopment Agency. Sorry. There were, you know, no decisions made. There was just, and they'd had this meeting with the county already. So this is a little bit of an after the fact, since Visit was not, you know, did not present, which had been kind of a question. Are they going to present at the county? I don't know. I haven't looked. I don't think next week's agenda is out yet. I suppose we'll see. But what had seemed like it was going towards renovate the Bay Center part one, part two, build a flex space, athletic space for primarily youth sports tournaments, and then look down the road at figuring out the possibility of a hotel on the property. Parking is obviously a big part of this equation. Maybe an ice sheet, but that's going to be up to Greg Harris with the Ice Flyers. Well, Visit's hoping to change that conversation to renovate the Bay Center part one, do a convention center part two, find or figure out a hotel and parking, and then we don't really care about the ice sheet, except maybe it's nice, but again, let that be with Greg Harris and the Ice Flyers. So that's just kind of how they're hoping to shift the conversation. I have gone back on this and forth on this so many times myself. I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. I actually think that both of them would pay off significantly. I probably, if you push me, I think the convention center probably makes more sense because the, you know, the sports facility doesn't need to be downtown, but a convention center most certainly needs to be downtown. We've got lots of surplus hotel space coming online, about 500 rooms in the area. That's not the same as having an on-the-campus, you know, hotel property that would have maybe a ballroom enclosed within it. But there are still a lot of pieces to be solved, not the least significant of which is the parking and the open question of what to do with the Grand Hotel, which is, you know, your guess is as good as anybody else's. I just wanted you to know that's the conversation that's going on right now. 522 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
You've probably heard all those ads for life insurance. Just a few dollars a day, apply online in minutes, no medical exam. Simple, easy, and cheap, right? Now you're thinking, maybe I should get a quote. Well, smart thinking. Everyone should have life insurance. But here's what they don't tell you. Those few dollars a day rates, they're for young people in perfect health. That's why everyone calls Big Lou the 50 to 60-year-old not-so-perfect candidate. Like you. You take prescription meds and you're overweight. Winner, winner, fried chicken dinner. Well, Big Lou works with life insurance companies that want people like you with no surprises after you apply. In fact, if you're a 50-year-old guy with a few health glitches, Lou could probably find you $1 million of term life coverage for about $200 a month. So, yeah, you need life insurance. But unless you're young and healthy, you gotta call Big Lou, because he's like you, older, heavier, and on meds, too. Get a quote right now at 800-511-3535. 800-511-3535 or biglou.com.
We asked people we spoke with, what does it take to keep getting better with age?
Keep growing.
Remember where you came from, it's the foundation of who you are.
Show up for others. Learn something new.
Stay connected.
That's been our approach at Pennair for 90 years. Staying connected. Continuing to grow. And never losing sight of who we serve. Pennair Credit Union, 90 years strong.
Spring is here. Oh yeah, and it's time to warm things up with the new slow smoke menu at Sonny's Barbecue. Whether it's our brisket grilled cheese, the hot link loaded mac, or the amazing new peach cobbler egg rolls, you're sure to love them. Maybe you're throwing a party and need some barbecue catered. We can help with that. Whether you're picking up, need it delivered, or a team to come out and serve. With four locations in the News Radio area, visit sunnysbbq.com to learn more or order today. And remember, it's always Sunny's here.
The five-day outlook is calling for intense flooding, followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio
92.3. Uh-huh. Come on.
You're imagining things.
Am I? Then why are you following me? Afraid I was going to leave without giving you a goodbye kiss?
I just assumed it was a Wookiee.
I can arrange that. You could use a good kiss.
You know, I'm actually amazed at some of the things that happen on social media, and I'm a big advocate for free speech. I am also an advocate for informed speech and responsible speech, and just the level of foolishness and ignorance and outright lies that you see on social media is amazing to me, and then how people circulate those. And not on April Fool's Day, you know, like they don't know the difference. I was just looking at one, and, you know, my wife had mentioned this to me last night. She said, did Governor DeSantis sign a law prohibiting joyriding? I'm like, no. No. She says, well, I'm looking at a post that talks about, you know, House Bill 626, aimless driving is prohibited, and it's got a lot of details. I'm like, no, that didn't happen. There's no such thing. But I do what a good news person does. I'm like, I mean, something could have slipped by me, so I go and look it up. No such bill. I go and look it for news. No such news sources. Nothing. But there's a Facebook group, People of Florida, that I'm looking at right now that I'm, you know, this is a group that's usually kind of entertaining. And, you know, it's got an official-looking thing, State of Florida, Office of the Governor, Governor's signature. And thank goodness, you know, somebody else on the same post had posted that this is totally fake, and I posted the same thing. And it looks like maybe, I don't know if they're, like, hiding comments or something, but, yeah, this is unconstitutional. It's fake. It's fake. Why do you have this? What is wrong with you people? So it's, you know, people are sharing it because it's outrageous. It's okay. I've said my piece. 437-1620. 437-1620. This is kind of in the same genre, so I'll mention it. You may have seen this kind of a comment on social media. It's amazing that they're sharing all of this news about the Hantavirus cruise and all the people who, you know, some very small number of people who died, and then the other people who are being quarantined, at the same time as they're not reporting all of the pedophiles they found in the child porn ring at Disney cruises. Okay. There's truth, okay, but there's not the truth you think there is. CBP, Customs and Border Protection, did in fact deport 27 cruise ship workers who are alleged, you don't have to prove it to deport them, it's a lower standard for deportation, to have been in receipt of child pornography, and 27 of the 28 were involved in either the receipt, possession, transportation, distribution, or viewing of child sexual explicit material, CSEM, or child pornography. They canceled the visas for 27, 26 of whom were from the Philippines, deported them back home. At least 10 of the detained subjects were employees of Disney Cruise Line, which is, I hate to draw you the distinction, but Disney Cruise and Disney World are not the same thing, but okay. They also had people from Holland America confirmed that some of their employees were involved in the investigation. They called the allegations deeply disturbing. So, okay. First of all, did it actually, you know, it makes it seem like it's like other, like another Disney cruise has got all these child pornographers on it, whatever. I mean, there were some across the cruise lines, not even necessarily only on one ship. There were like, I thought I read that there were 10 different ships that they raided. I'm going on memory on that part, but it seemed to me like there were several different ships. So, okay. It's Disney kids. We get hypersensitive about that. And it's not a good story, certainly. But this way people interpret news and what they perceive as news being covered as a cover up of other things. Yeah, you're right. The Hantavirus thing is all manufactured and smoke in order to distract you from some other. Shh. Just shh. Stop. Go outside. Play soccer, golf, tennis. You need to get off the internet because it's driving you crazy and stupid at the same time. 528 on News Radio 92.3. I'll have to get to that a little bit later. That's a funny story. The Senate has unanimously advanced 99-0 a resolution that would suspend senators' pay during a shutdown. You say, wow, that's good. Unanimous, right? Yeah, well, who's going to be the one to vote against it after a 70-plus day shutdown where everybody wasn't getting paid? Well, not, you know, some very important people were not getting paid who worked for, you know, CBP and air traffic and DHS, you know, right? Okay. And they said, yeah, this is a good bill. I'm not impressed. And I'll tell you, by the way, they can do this to themselves. It would have to go in after the election. You cannot pass a change in your compensation until your term expires. So they can't do it now, but it would be. And there is maybe another shutdown coming this fall, by the way. They can do it to themselves just like the House can do it to themselves. The president can't veto it. There's no intervention. Here's what doesn't impress me about this. They still get paid just later. You know that the average senator is not poor. The average senator is not dependent on his or her month-to-month paycheck in order to get by. So it's an inconvenience, maybe, at best, for them to not get paid for another month or two. It is not going to affect their lives. Even if you actually did a bill that said you cannot be paid during the shutdown, I mean, you know, that would at least be something. Now, that one might run afoul of the Constitution and some other issues, but this is nothing. It must be nothing. They voted unanimously for it. Do they ever vote unanimously for anything of substance?
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop. President Trump and China's leader Xi Jinping are meeting for 2 hours on the first full day of their summit in Beijing.
They talked about expanding market access for American businesses. And President Xi expressed interest in purchasing more American oil to reduce China's dependence on the strait in the future. That's a really big takeaway.
White House correspondent Aisha Hosni traveling with the president. White House official says both countries agreed that Iran can never have a nuclear weapon and that the Strait of Hormuz must remain open. Now, a reporter asking both leaders about Taiwan, this was the president's answer.
Great place. Incredible. China's beautiful.
China warning the U.S. about Taiwan at the meeting. Taiwan responding saying it's not particularly surprised by China's statements. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3, 64 degrees. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies this morning, and we'll get a look at our forecast from Channel 3 and meteorologist Brooke Richardson in just a few minutes. Milton's police chief is in Washington, D.C. this week. While she was there to represent the city, she ended up representing the entire state. City manager Ed Spears from this last Tuesday's Milton City Council meeting. The pride in the room was clear.
I'm happy to report that she was called to Washington, D.C. by United States Senator Ashley Moody to represent the city during the National Law Enforcement Week in Washington. And while there, she was chosen to represent all of the law enforcement of the state of Florida. So she got to make a speech today on behalf of law enforcement leaders in Florida.
And the Milton Police Department has posted photos from Chief Jennifer Frank's speech to law enforcement leaders on their Facebook page. Ed Spears also said that he slipped a list of city projects that need funding into her travel portfolio, so he's hoping she'd get some one-on-one time with Senator Moody while she's there. Milton High School's third annual Staff versus Students basketball game raised $4,000 for the Santa Rosa Kids House, a nonprofit that provides advocacy and counseling for abused children. Student body vice president Christian Miller was at that council meeting to share the news about that. Previous years raised thousands of dollars for a student's heart transplant and for a children's hospital. The students won the game by 2 points. Visit Pensacola is asking locals and visitors to write a love letter to the city for a chance to win a Pensacola vacation package valued at more than $2,500 from the 1500s with Love campaign celebrates America's 250th anniversary and Pensacola's history dating back to 1559. Entries must be 500 words or less, sharing meaningful memories and experiences with the city. Details are available at the Visit Pensacola website. Senator Rick Scott pressed Army leaders recently at a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing on the future of the military's simulation training center in Orlando and drone warfare capabilities. Army Secretary Daniel Driscoll said simulation is more important than ever for training counter-drone and drone models using real battlefield data. General Christopher Leneve called the Orlando facility incredible and said the Army has no plans to step away from its capabilities as the modernization continues. It's 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast this morning.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We will be seeing sunny skies today with a high near 84 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 62. For Friday, mostly sunny skies, high near 82. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 63. Keeping sunshine around on your Saturday with a high near 82 degrees. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 68 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now, 64 degrees across the area, partly cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Cerebras, a maker of artificial intelligence chips, has raised roughly $5.5 billion in its initial public offering. Enthusiasm has been building for the company's debut, which could be followed later this year by much bigger offerings from SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic. At the IPO price, CEO Andrew Feldman is sitting on a $1.9 billion stake in the company. Cisco shares soared 17% after the networking company issued results and guidance that topped Wall Street's projections. Revenue increased 12% in the quarter that ended April 25th. That is up from nearly $14.2 billion a year earlier. The company said it is cutting its workforce this quarter by fewer than 4,000 jobs. OpenAI said it has found no evidence that its user data was accessed after a security issue involving a supply chain attack on TANSAC, an open-source library. The company added that two employee devices in its corporate environment were impacted after TANSAC got compromised earlier this week. Futures are slightly higher. That's Your Money Now.
Making a few small changes to how you use energy in your home can make a big difference. Like setting your AC, every degree you raise it can save you up to 5% on cooling costs. With the FPL Energy Manager, you can easily monitor how much energy you're using, see which appliances use the most, and how it affects your bill. Keep more money in your pocket by making your home more energy efficient. Learn more at fpl.com/ways to save.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you. On your phone, on your computer, wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter, even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
To answer for constituents, they've been marking the natural gas throughout my district, and they were asking what that's about, if anybody knows. It's been a pretty widespread marking of the gas going back through.
We never mark gas lines because we know where they are. The markings you see are for fiber that are going to tear up neighborhoods and do a very bad job of restoration.
Mm. Well, that will go over well for them.
It's T-Mobile.
Yes.
I think this might be my all-time favorite comment from Jen Brayer. Oh, man. We lived through it in my neighborhood. You know, I live in the county, not in the city. But, you know, the new fiber came through, and they were a problem. And then other utilities came through. I know ECUA ran some pipes in the same time because they were trying to take advantage of the fact that work was being done. And, you know, it was not good. And, you know, then in the end, they were cutting holes in people's driveways, and they all Man, I cannot swear on the radio, but they look like bleep. I mean, they do. They look terrible. So, woohoo, coming to your neighborhood. There's nothing you can do about it. Mayor D.C. Reeves joins us now. That's the key thing to understand. Number one, this is not the city. Number two, there's nothing you can do to stop it. So sit back and enjoy the suck, right?
Yeah, well, we're trying to do our best to do what little that we can. And yes, you have nailed it. This is a contractual right-of-way that other than pulling permits, there is no – city can't stop it. The city doesn't have a lot of purview in what these utilities having the easement of the right-of-way, of the city's right-of-way. So that's the work you're seeing. But I'm tired of it too. And you know, I shared with my press conference yesterday that I sent a letter to these companies saying, you know, this is ridiculous and you need to be, you know, fixing these things. And we have provided publicly the point of contact phone numbers for those utility companies with the hope of number one, making sure that the public understands who to call, because I've gotten many texts from friends that say, hey, this happened, or my sprinkler got cut, or things like that. You know, what do we do? Which is, you know, a big part of my job, right? If you don't know, then you go to the mayor, you go to the city and say what's going on, understandably.
Right.
And so that folks have done that. And I found it interesting. I shared this yesterday, that right when we shared that, when we shared that information, I got a couple calls or texts from some of the folks working for the utility that says, man, we've been getting a lot of phone calls. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. that's where they're supposed to be going. You know,
right.
Welcome to the club, I think is what I said yesterday. So, you know, listen, if work is good and adding fiber and access to the internet, fast access is great. But, you know, we have the expectation that you're going to put it back the way it came. And that is crystal clear. So anyway, we're staying on top of it as best we can as kind of a third party to this. But I do encourage anybody who's had any issues, just Google it right now. It's on our website. It's on our social media. Find those direct points of contact with AT&T and T-Mobile if you're having any particular issues. And it is their job to get it corrected.
And it's worth saying that, you know, some crews, some installers, some are better than others. There's not all this. It's not a one hegemonic thing that it's everybody. But, you know, you do feel powerless as a homeowner when that happens because, you know, like, who do you call? You can't call Ghostbusters. You know, who are you going to call to solve this problem? And they almost never. I mean, it's a wide range of restoration. Sometimes it's quite good, and sometimes it's like, my God, somebody dropped a bomb on my yard, so thanks for nothing. Let's talk about the continuum of care for a second, because you and I were chatting briefly off air before you came on, like we always do, and, you know, I covered this extensively a minute ago about, you know, what's being done at Opening Doors Northwest Florida and Bruce Cady, the new executive director there. And I think it's a really good thing that government is actually a part of this decision-making board. And to me, that was the first time. But you told me that it's not even just that.
Yeah. I think two key things have happened in the last 24 months. If you recall, I called a joint meeting with Dr. Joe Savage from the Intergovernmental Agency on Homelessness federally. He was our representative. We had a meeting at Bayview Park about 2 years ago. And during that assessment, he kind of confirmed what we already knew, which is we had some real deficiencies as it pertained to how the procedural operation, nothing below board, but just the efficiency and operation of our current COC setup. And quickly, why a COC matters in one sentence is that is the spigot of federal money that comes to have your community solve homelessness. That is the sole spigot. So the COC is the federally designated area that says this is how much money you get from the federal government to solve homelessness. And that's based on your population. It's based on what they call the PIT count, point in time, in essence, account of the homeless population within your community. So that's why you can understand how vital a COC is. Because if you're not writing things down and you're not on top of things, that could be the difference, I believe, right now in millions of dollars annually coming in to help solve homelessness. So that's why the COC is so important. So I'm just going to call it as it is. We were not in a efficient place a couple of years ago. And now with Bruce on and what you just mentioned, basically it was an overhaul of the structure of our local COC that now has a governance board that has some oversight. The COC still operates as the COC. It still has its folks, but you now have some extra, not only eyes and ears to make sure that things are going well, but that's extra advocates. I mean, that's what it really is let us in here to make sure that if you need something from the city, the county, all of these other amazing agencies that we have around here trying to solve this issue, that we stay on top of it. So I think we have made enormous strides. You may not notice it if you're just not paying as close attention.
Yeah.
But where we are today with RCSC and leadership there compared to where we were 2 years ago is not only night and day, but something that I'm certainly energized to help with, given the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to talk about how all these different organizations need to work together, not duplicate services and be part of a team. It's another thing entirely to create a 15-member board that involves, like, your mom, Connie Bookman, and, you know, Chandra Smiley and Allison Patton from the city, and all kinds of other folks in organizing, actually not just getting government in that process, but having a board at all is something that's a new thing. And so, yeah, I think he's doing great work, and I love to see the results we're going to get from this. I want to remind you that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. Mr. Mayor, and you know, you and I've talked quite a bit. I think you've really done quite a good job of communicating the sanitation thing and, you know, talking about causes and all of that, and remedies, and it, you know, the city's behind, and there's all kinds of, and I've talked about it quite a bit this morning. But you know, for the people who just maybe haven't heard any of it, can you maybe just give them the 1 minute? Here's why it's been a problem this year, and here's what we're doing to solve it.
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, the backup in yard trash that we've had has been spurred solely by a massively unforeseen increase in total tons picked up. So we were at 6.1 million. So if you just take February through May of 2024, that was 6.1 million pounds of just yard trash, yard waste. Then last year was 7.7, February through May. This year we're at almost 9.1. And with 20 or 18 days left in the month. So we will go from 6.1 to 7.7 to over 10 million in a matter of 24 months. And so what the difficulty that's caused us is, listen, if we had 1,000 new customers sign up for regular garbage service, that's predictable. We would see the 1,000 come in, right? We would know, we would say, man, we need a new truck. We need a new crew. When it's a free service that you do not need to necessarily call, right? You just put it out at the road. This is an inevitable scenario that if it continues to increase this way, there's going to be a year where you don't know. And we just certainly didn't expect it to increase this violently over a 24-month stretch. And so that really is why it's been a particular problem this year compared to previous years, is that we've expected the surge in previous years. We certainly did not expect to pick up 4 million more pounds of yard waste than we did 2 years ago. So that's about 1,000 truckloads in addition to over the same amount of time. So
I was doing the math on this because I try to conceptualize things, and I don't know what 1 million pounds of yard debris means. But if you think in 2024, we had about 1,500 total truckloads of yard debris during that 3 month period. Last year, it was 1,800 truckloads, and this year it's going to push 2,500 truckloads when all is said and done. There's no job where you can add 30 to 40% of your workload and not suffer a problem when you didn't anticipate it. So,
it's the unpredictable key to that. But the bottom line is, and I said this yesterday, if I'm one of the 55,000 people who pay taxes here and pay for a sanitation bill, you have an expectation, you know, hey, Mayor, I hear you. Come get this yard trash. Well, that's what we're doing. So we spent another $50,000 of injected temp labor, more trucks. All of that are hitting the ground. We have at least one truck in every single neighborhood 6 days a week right now, at least, if not more. So that is unprecedented for us to be doing. That has not happened as long as I've been here. So I do appreciate everybody's patience, and I get it. You got other things to worry about, and you want that picked up. It's my job to worry about it, and we're going to get it picked up.
And just one small note that Daryl Singleton, the sanitation director, made the other day is, do please use bags, just because that is a faster process for them. Even plastic bags are okay. Mm-hmm. At this point, we're in, you know, recovery from the yard debris apocalypse, and so anything helps at this point.
Right.
Every little bit helps. Switching gears a little bit, let's talk about the the tree. You mentioned that you're working on a tree ordinance with Jared Moore. There's obviously been a story about this one tree downtown, or two trees, I guess, on this lot, where the neighbors, and my understanding, I mean, Brian Spencer, a former city council president member, had put a very elaborate comment on that, involved comment, in which he said he doesn't understand why these people didn't just buy the tree, you know, or buy the lot. It wouldn't have been that much money to create a little HOA for them, and they could have put a couple $1,000s, $10,000 or $15,000 a piece up into it, and they could have, because ultimately you can't stop somebody from taking down a tree. on their lot by law in Florida. But the discouragement from taking down particularly old, big, beautiful trees maybe needs to be heightened. Is that where you guys are at?
Exactly. I think we need to add a little reality on both sides because, I mean, it is such a divisive issue because of, one, the fallacy that people believe that the mayor or the city council get to just designate and tell a private property owner exactly what they can do with their property permanently, which is, as you just mentioned, is not the case. So that's an easy gaslighty thing to say on social media, as we see, is why is the mayor letting them do this? Why is the city council letting them do this? Well, you got to go call Tallahassee because we cannot, at the end of the day, if someone wants to do it, however, we can put better controls in place. And so what Jared Moore and I have looked at is, you know, we have a big laundry list of protected and heritage trees. I think we need to probably sift through that. We're looking at right now, we're having a meeting, I believe, I have one on Friday, to kind of look at where we came back in terms of comps of what other cities in Florida are actually charging as the fee to cut down a tree. Because on the other side of the argument, I don't think we've touched the fees on cutting these trees down since like 2009.
Wow.
Which, you know, there's lots of people that talk, you know, about, well, we should make it more restrictive. Well, we haven't made it more restrictive in the last 17 or 18 years in terms of the fee and fine. But that shouldn't just be put blanket across every of the, you know, million protected trees and heritage trees we have listed. But what do we always think of? We think of these big, beautiful heritage oaks,
right?
Different types of oaks that we want to continue to see in our community. I love our tree canopy. It makes us special. And so, you know what? We cannot tell a private property owner they can't do it. But when these fines are sometimes $400, $500, it needs to be painful enough for you to maybe ask your architect to build around it or to maybe figure out how to associate your house on the wrong, you know, on this side. But when somebody's building a, you know, $500,000 house or $1 million house, a $400 fine is not going to be in the best interest of the city. So we're just trying to put
the fine for taking down the offset payment for taking down a heritage oak is $400.
There's different. I'm oversimplifying,
okay,
it, but but it's in that ballpark. In certain instances can be an extremely low number.
Right.
Wow. You know, there's lots of complexity to it. But the bottom line is, Jared and I are going to come back with, hey, if you're going to take down a tree that's important to our canopy, then it's going to be painful. That's the whole idea. Is that yes, you can still do it, but it needs to be painful. But that doesn't need to be every type of tree either. You know, and I think we kind of took the nuclear bomb to the anthill approach in the previous iteration where we included so many trees, as protected and heritage and all these things. So that's what we're looking at, and I'm looking forward to bringing something to council for them to consider.
All right, very good. Well, we'll look forward to talking about that more in the future. We don't have time to talk about it, but I know we're all, you know, we're super proud of Keela Richardson. I know you were too, and some of your comments were fantastic. And seeing her at the airport yesterday, I was just, you know, all a very good thing. And the ad for us was fantastic. I love seeing Pensacola get promoted at somebody else's dime. barely on our dime whatsoever. All right, the lightning round we always like to end with. We were just talking about your mom a little bit, Connie Bookman. What's your mom's favorite phrase or admonition that she said to you 1,000 times if she said it once?
I was going to say, me and my brother were 14 months apart and fought all the time. I was thinking go pick out a belt might have been her favorite phrase.
Nice. Well done. At a time when that was good, and it still should be.
Yeah.
Do you have a separate towel for bath, hand, and face? Are those all three separate things for you, or just one for all of it, or what?
I'm bath and face.
Is separate. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm
interesting. And something about your line of work, being a mayor, that is completely fake in movies that people or TV, where, you know, people have the wrong idea entirely because they've seen TV and they know what a mayor does.
Oh, gosh. Telling people that they can't cut trees down on their yard. Does that count?
No.
Oh, man. I could give you a laundry list of these. Or why don't I take the Grand Hotel from a private property owner? There's just some misunderstanding of, you know, the legal purview of my job. Let's encapsulate it that way.
I got you. Very good. But generally, in, you know, TV, the mayor can do anything he wants anytime. And, you know, that sense of power welcome to American government. Mayor D.C. Reeves, as always, sir, thank you for the time. We'll look forward to talking to you next week and the city council meeting tomorrow night. We'll see you next week.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
What'd you say, PJ? You thought he would have referenced something from Spin City?
Yeah.
That's the handlers
the
do everything.
Detached mayor.
Yeah, right. The you know, the one who doesn't really know what's going on, the kind of bumbling fool who's just good looking and speaks well when he's given a script to read. Oh, man. 554 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Frontier Motors, their business model is to just do it better. And by do it better, I mean not do it where you feel icky afterwards or during. You know, a lot of, we all know this. You've all been to a place where a sales place, you know, car place, used or new, and you just felt like, you know, kind of have to scrape that off me when I leave, right? And that's unpleasant. And then you feel like, well, did I get a good deal or did I get taken advantage of all, you know, and plus just the hassle of it all, okay? We all know this. Frontier just tries to do it differently because their theory is, okay, that model of car sales is based on seeing you one time, getting everything, squeezing every piece of, you know, money out of you we can this one time, and then never having to see you again. And they look at it as, well, we're in a community together. You know, we're neighbors. And we'd like to treat you in a way we'd like to be treated, you know, golden rule. And then maybe we treat you well enough that you want to come back to us again and again. So, you know, maybe we don't make that extra money off of you this time, but if we can make you customers that are happy about this process sort of for life, then good for us and good for you. And that's what they do. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, right behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Visit Pensacola is home for all things Pensacola. I'm Nicole Stacy, Vice President of Visit Pensacola. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel this week as we discuss what is next for our community. This summer, get tips on the Blue Angels, beaches, festivals, and all things fun. You don't want to miss it.
The thing, too, that I love about where we live and our beaches is that they're family beaches.
Tomorrow at 9:30, let us show you the way to beach on News Radio 92.3.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
When storms pop up fast, it helps to already know where to go.
We've got all the details.
News Radio 92.3.
92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
You can't lie to a nun.
So we have good news. Whenever it's possible, I like to bring you good news. I wish there were more of it. But opioid overdose deaths have dropped in Florida substantially, 42% January to June of last year to this year. They've fallen by 46% for fentanyl-caused deaths. That's according to the interim. That's provisional. It's not final yet. But the 2025 Drugs and Deceased Persons Report, released by the Florida Medical Examiner's Commission, or the MEs, if you want to think of them that way. Governor DeSantis said that's huge. It's a huge success story, and everybody who's been involved in that should be awfully proud of those numbers. So that's true. He says law enforcement, and I don't want to say law enforcement has no effect, but News Service of Florida is reporting that the advocates in the field say it's not so much law enforcement as it is a shift in how people consume their drugs. And that because they are now consuming drugs differently than they were several years ago, and there are alternate drugs that they're consuming that don't have the dangers of fentanyl, they think that's the reason why, which is sort of a, you know, mixed blessing. Good, less people are dying, fewer people are dying, not as good that it's not because, you know, fewer people are using. 70,000 Americans died from overdose December to December of last year, the lowest number since the fall of 2019, a decline of 14%. Remember, it had been right around 100,000 for a couple of years. 43 states saw decreases. Who saw an increase? Arizona and New Mexico, 18% and 22% respectively increase. So not everybody is enjoying the benefit. But apparently there's new drugs that are being used that allow you a little bit more control or don't have the same side effects of fentanyl. The other one is apparently, you know, I don't want to be the guy who's like teaching people, but apparently instead of injecting, they're smoking it now, and that gives them more control. It seems backwards to me, but okay. And so because they don't have to risk the extremely high dose anymore, just people aren't ODing as much. Again, not because they're not consuming, but because they're consuming differently, or they're consuming different substances like xylazine or mendetamidine or any of these other things. So people are still alive. Take the win. But maybe we still have a lot of work to do.
Local talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.